Welcome to Hollywood Ungagged, the Killeen Howe of political podcasts. Season 5, Episode 5, I am your host, David McClement, broadcasting from the Blantyre Free State, and joining me this evening is the Hollywood OG, the wood fire air himself, Falkirk's Pizza Hut Prince, Brian Stewart Finlay.
Hello,
hi, Brian.
Hi.
And the third member of the season's triumvirate is the creator and host of the Hidden Wings and Bloodlust podcast, it's Rachel Horowitz. Hey, Rachel.
Hello.
Welcome back. You were a guest way back, I think, the first season of Hollywood.
Yeah, I was. We were discussing the Pride show.
That's right.
Pride it was an excellent film, and you must all watch it. And if you haven't seen it already...
I watched it like two nights ago.
And even if you've watched it already, you should watch it again.
Yeah, I watched it with my 10-year-old, and she absolutely loved it. But I kept having to pause it to explain things. Because she's like, so wait, why don't they like people because they're gay? And I was like, well, back in the 80s.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
And then because ever since I had children, I become a weepy mess at the slightest thing. I'm reading out the bits at the end to her and I'm trying not to make my voice crack because it's sad. And I'm like, oh, it was an enjoyable but emotional watch.
Every time I watch that film, it's like, it's just that last section, you know, the last scene is, you know, when the buses all turn up, I'm like, oh, it's just so sad.
I just thought the whole thing, like from beginning, it's sometimes some films like just really kind of like lose it until like when it gets to the end. This one never did. It was just like outstanding from absolutely you start to finish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's one of the films that's like, I couldn't suggest a single thing to improve it.
No. It's very rare that you get that with a film, like, in my opinion.
That and the Spice World film.
Oh, yeah.
Change nothing.
The really funny thing is, I know you're not kidding there, Brian.
I am absolutely not kidding. Not at all. Funny story, actually. So when the Spice World film came out, so what, you were talking, what, 1997? So it was like 25 years old, Boxing Day, right? When it came out on VHS, my parents had to wait in a queue outside Woolworths from about 4 in the morning to get me the Jerry Halliwell tin, and there we go. So that's what you call love, and that's how you support your queer kids.
Your Jerry Halliwell what?
Tin. It's, you know, like a tin. The VHS video came in tins, right, with each Spice Girl, right?
I think I remember that. And it had a really cool box.
It did.
Yeah.
It did. Yes, I have it. I still have it.
I actually thought you said Jerry Halliwell tint. And I thought, I was imagining you'd be some kind of fake tan. Try to make yourself look like Jerry Halliwell.
Love it.
I thought you said a Jerry Halliwell pin, like a pin, like of a badge of Jerry Halliwell.
There was a missed opportunity there.
Yeah.
I'm a Sun Guide Film Club.
Yeah, this is like...
Although I don't think we'd ever get round to doing the Spice World movie.
Well, we could certainly make it a priority.
Didn't one of them out themselves as a Tory like a couple of months ago or something?
Well, they all did back in the day. And they quickly backtracked on it. I think, was it Scary Spice?
Claimed
it. Margaret Thatcher was the first Spice Girl and they get a bad reaction and they totally rolled it back, but clearly at least some of them were absolute Tories and just realised that was not a good marketing movie.
I think it was just like peak capitalism
at
that time, and then there were kind of New Labour and basically I just don't think they wanted to be a particularly political band, but
which is fair enough.
Just fair enough, you know, and they've just got absolute bangers, so you know,
One of them's for Liverpool, so she had me a Tory at least.
She's not, girl, Mel C, she's not a Tory.
I think
out of all of them, she's probably the one with like the best politics and stuff, because I know that she, I know that she's like queer of some description, like I know that she, like a few years ago, she was she came out as gay, and then she was dating a guy, I think, so I don't know, but like she said something else that I really liked as well. I can't really remember what it was.
Yeah, I actually just read her autobiography just around Christmas time. It's a good read, you should read it.
I'll get right on that.
Yeah, there you go. Just something to get into.
I still get Emma Buntings to get through first, Brian. Come on, give me a minute.
I love it.
How's everybody's week been?
Not bad. Had a really nice weekend, actually. Went out with a friend of mine who's quite into folk music, and she was doing a session in the pub, and with all these people like playing on like random medieval instruments and singing like sea shanty kind of esque type songs. It was brilliant. So
I had quite a nice weekend as well. I had some people over to watch the football yesterday, so we watched the Celtic men's game at 12, then a couple hours drinking, and then watched the Celtic women's game at 4 o'clock, and saw 8 Celtic goals in total and 3 missed penalties. So it was quite eventful.
Nice. I basically was just doing more gardening over the weekend, which is quite nice. Quite enjoying it.
Just embracing middle age.
I went to my allotment at the weekend. It was brilliant because I hadn't actually been for a couple of weeks. I had a bit of a scary incident with some kids that kind of live quite nearby. They'd like been a bit intimidating and stuff. But like at the weekend, I went with my mum and we just kind of like. Checked on how the beetroots were doing, and they seem to be, some of them seem to be coming up, which is good.
Nice. Glad to hear it.
Yeah.
So that's quite relevant then, since we do have a related news story.
Yeah, we do, don't we?
So on that note, I'd suggest that we get ungagged. Okay, let's start with that story that we alluded to before the intro. A woman who transformed her garden into an allotment to help feed families struggling with the cost of living crisis says she is heartbroken after it was ruined in a sabotage attack. Carly Bird was growing fruit and vegetables as part of her A Meal on Me with Love initiative to help those in benefits, low-paid earners and pensioners. Boxes were given out through the scheme are filled with essentials such as organic fruit and vegetables that Miss Bird grew in her garden. But she posted a video on TikTok last week which showed the garden had been scattered with salt, which caused plants to dehydrate and which she said would mean the food would not now grow. In the aftermath of the attack, Carly did set up a GoFundMe to repair the garden with an initial target of £4,000, which has now reached almost £250,000 in donations. Rachel, I'll go to you first, since you mentioned that you've got an allotment.
Yeah.
So this probably hits you a wee bit more personally than maybe a lot of people.
I don't know, like it's just like I would just haven't looked just reading the story now. This is like a really horrible thing to do. And I wonder, it seems to have been like quite a premeditated attack, and I wonder whether it was just like some kids playing pranks or whether it was something more sinister. I don't know. And she says that she's got multiple sclerosis and lupus, and so obviously like this is clearly something that's very meaningful to her. And like when I'm on my allotment as well, like, you know, it's just a really nice way to pass the time. Like, it's very relaxing, it's very satisfying to see things grow. I mean, I'm not really particularly good at having them grow, but I mean, I just think what she's been doing, like feeding people during the cost of living crisis, I mean, that's brilliant. But I don't know, I mean, I don't know what to say about this. It just seems like a really nasty thing to do, and just from the story that you sent, I wonder if there was anything political involved, or is it just something that someone that doesn't like her, or, I mean, what do you think about it?
It does seem kind of targeted.
Yeah.
You know, if it was just like, you know, random vandalism, you'd expect the place to be a bit trashed and messed up, but to actually have the earth salted just as taking it to the next level.
Yeah.
Brian, what were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems like it's premeditated in a particular way. Again, it is difficult to try and get to the bottom of what the actual motivation was. But here you've got somebody who is vulnerable themselves, somebody who probably has experience of support, like, you know, the people that she is supporting. And I just think it's a really horrible, horrible thing to do. I mean, the fact that you, like you're saying, it's particularly targeting what she's growing, so there's salt in the earth, which obviously causes problems, not just for the round of stuff that's already been planted, but the stuff, like, you know, if she was to dig the stuff back up and attempt to grow it again, it would potentially cause more problems, so she'd be unable to grow more. But taking a step back from this particular incident, what we see in the cost of living crisis and the realities of Tory Britain is that you're actually relying on people or acts of kindness to feed people. Like, this is the reality of where we're at, and we should not have to rely on other people's solidarity really to actually feed themselves. It's a really, really sad context for this to be in. But the positive side of things is to see how much that the GoFundMe has raised. It's like one of these nice things where something really horrible happens and it's devastating and it has an impact on vulnerable people. Then actually when that story goes viral and it's covered in the media, we get to see the best of people. You know, we get to see people donating and seeing some positive. I think, you know, it's horrible what's happened to this individual who's taken the time to look after and care for people. But also it's particularly sad that we're in a context where we need to rely on individuals or organisations like that to make sure that people have access to nutritious food. It's just a sad, it's like a sad situation upon a sad situation.
It's just like, it's so twisted. And I 100% am convinced it is like in a political thing. And I can just imagine some gammon being so pleased that they've got one up my do-gooder. Like, you know, when did good become a bad thing? And we're seeing that kind of thing pop up a lot yet for the sort of government rhetoric. And it's so spiteful, vindictive, you know, like some trying to feed hungry people. And somebody's went out their way to sabotage that, you know, potentially leaving people, kids hungry, you know. And it's the exact same mindset you see when you see people in Facebook posts cheering about, you know, people drowning in his channel, you know. And it's just this kind of horrible nastiness that just seems to keep growing and growing every passing year.
And ironically, some of those people will have a like hashtag be kind on their Twitter, while basically spewing out all kinds of shit.
Yeah, the kind of people that every post about immigrants, they'll be saying, oh, why can we not help our own? And then somebody salts the bloody air.
Yeah, my one on that is always, how about we just like, what about all the homeless people that I don't give a shit about either? You know, it's just whataboutery. But why can't we look after the disabled veterans that I also don't give a shit about and like step over in the street?
Yeah, and when it's to stories like this, I think it just really hits home the importance of solidarity in general. So between the working class, whoever these people might be, whoever, you know, whatever the realities are and wherever is it the only way to defeat the capital class and this particular Tory government is to show solidarity. And I always find that, you know, coming back to the be kind thing, that tends to be very much on an individualistic basis. So we want day to day, oh, I'm going to be kind to you regardless to what you do to me, which, you know, that's just interact with people.
Yeah, it definitely does get used sometimes as a way of silencing people. Like, you know, it's the whole, I suppose, like the whole tone policing argument that gets said, like, oh, well, I'm not, like, someone said, oh, well, you're like Tory scum or whatever, like, how could you do this? Or, and then, oh, I want you to watch your tone, and you're trying to silence me. And it's like, well, like, no, like, what about like what you're actually doing? Oh, no, but you have to like... It winds me up no end when people get like that.
Yeah, it's the thing where like calling somebody a racist now is treated as if it's worse than being a racist.
Yeah, exactly, no, exactly. No, it is. I'm with you guys. I don't understand how we've even got to this point when you know, and they, oh yeah, oh, the left is so aggressive, and it's like, well, if you fucking watch, sorry, if you watch films and TV programs from the 70s when Nazi Germany was like a reality that people remembered, let's say, or not even Nazi Germany, just like something like if you watch the old like Harry Enfield sketches from the 90s, and there's like some Tory boy like being made fun of. And like these days, that probably wouldn't even be allowed on television. People would say, "Oh, you're like it's too woke, and people are and you're like you should like defeat the arguments and da da da." But like in actual fact, like we've moved so far towards coddling Tories basically, and worse than Tories, that I don't know, like it, and it's all kind of it annoys me so much. Sorry.
Right. Yeah, we used to make funny Tory boys, and now we just make them prime minister.
Exactly, and it's just like, you know, exactly. And now that probably wouldn't even be allowed on television, or maybe it would, but just.
I think it's like a good example of that, and you kind of touched on it earlier, Rachel. Was you know, when Angela Rayner was, you know, called out for saying Tory scum, when actually, you know, we can debate whether you would personally choose to use that word and the kind of position that Angela Rayner's in, but the reasons, the motivations behind saying that, and the sort of and the policies of goods coming out of this current Tory government, like that's more the problem rather than how somebody chose to frame that. It's just exhausting.
Quite agree with you there. I suppose also with the recent like trans stuff, the people that go on about but turf is a slur and all of this, and I remember like having a discussion with somebody that was actually about like anti-Semitism and that like years ago, and they were saying, oh yeah, but anti-Semite gets used like to like target particular people and all of this, but turf is a slur and all this, and it's like, well, you're basically saying that like you can't say like any bigotry that you can, whether it's anti-Semitism or whether it's racism or being a turf or whatever. But that's a slur and you can't say it. And but the person that thinks those things can just carry on as normal.
Yeah, I think this story actually really is like a kind of real microcosm, because you know, we see this really loud, aggressive hatred that seems to be everywhere, but I think when you look at the fact that they set up this GoFundMe, initially when I saw that, I thought, I'll put that in just so more people can donate. You know, they've already absolutely smashed their target by a factor of
a billion.
You know, it's and it just kind of reminds you that I think on balance people are still good, even though it's kind of it's easy to, in social media, and if you listen to phone-ins and that, it's easy to fall into despair that we're just surrounded by monsters, but they are a very, very vocal minority.
I quite agree with that.
Yeah, and I think when we talk about the vocal minority as well, sometimes the way that these, you know, wider debates, or if we talk about the cost of living, or we talk about how solidarity movements, trade unions and things like that, when you see it on the BBC and the likes, is this both siding of the argument? And it's almost like, you know, 50-50, they try to split the airtime, when actually you've got these individuals who perhaps hold much more prejudice or just frankly bigoted views, tend to be platformed as the same or as equal to those who are inclusive and progressive. So I think it's always important to remember when you read this story, and it just sort of translates into I think what the reality is, where you will have people who will do horrible things, somebody will be upset, a lot of people will reach out, support and want to be as inclusive and supportive.
But you just remind me of something I read, and I think somewhere on social media, I can't remember where it was, so it's a shame I can't actually say, because I thought it was so funny. It was, I think, talking about Paul O'Grady, and they said, you know, the BBC will report Paul O'Grady has passed away, and I presume they will invite some random person on who doesn't believe he's passed away in order to create balance.
There was also, it was also like a lot of revisionism going on, because there was like, well, I thought it wasn't there like some hack or someone that said, oh well, you know, well he's passed away, well he definitely wasn't woke, he wouldn't have stood for all this woke nonsense that there is. And it's like, well, actually, like he was like the definition of woke and like the definition of what you don't like.
Yeah, you're starting to see that as well. Yeah, I kind of attempt to claim dead celebrities. I think the first I noticed that was I'm struggling to remember his name. He was the sci-fi writer.
Was it Terry Pratchett?
Terry Pratchett, who was very pro-trans, but there was a concerted effort by gender critical folk to try and claim him as somehow on their side. And total, you know, I think some people think, oh, because he spoke with a working class accent, he must be a bigot. You know, that's the kind of attitude that I think a lot of people in certain circles have.
I think what's particular, and I know I feel like we've kind of gone away from the main topic there, but I think this is important to say, is that when it comes to Paul O'Grady, I think the reason a lot of people were saying stuff like that, yeah, it's probably because he speaks with a working class accent, but I think it's because he took target with so many people, but with Paul O'Grady, in most instances, was always punching up the way. But because it's not dressed up in the sort of, I don't know how to kind of say it, because it was done with dry and sarcastic and quite sometimes really, you know, sarcastic humour. I think that it's almost lost on some people. You know, that's not how he was.
Completely agree with you there. I think there's also sometimes as well, I think you get this tendency. I know we've gone quite away from the main topic, but sometimes you get this kind of tendency to like buy people who are not necessarily like that. And the fact that they kind of like, especially at things like the BBC, they kind of feel the need to sort of not necessarily to like not use particular words or things, but like just be like, oh well, you know, I feel the need to like get out of my echo chamber and listen to this person, and like maybe they do have a point or whatever. And like, it's I get why, because it's like I like to talk to people that I don't necessarily agree with everything on, but I think certainly with the BBC, they kind of like, they tend in that particular direction, and they do it all the time, not just things like the cost of living, but just like with everything. And it's something that you do need to do, because, you know, I like to have my views challenged and all of that. But I think that they kind of take it from the point of view almost that the Tories are right, and even if they don't agree, there has to be deferential to them.
Yeah, it's like they build a masterstroke of convincing not just the general public, but the BBC itself, that they had a bias towards the left, and it's now like the BBC have almost accepted that. They're bending over backwards to prove that they're not left-wing. A bit like leaders of the Labour Party, seem to be.
Don't tell me about the leader of the Labour Party.
Ready to open a can of worms there. Let's move on to the next topic. The UK government is refusing to say why it is keeping nuclear safety reports secret, because it is worried about anti-nuclear arguments from the Scottish government. The Ministry of Defence won't give its reasons for failing to release annual assessments of the safety of nuclear weapons on the Clyde, as it is not to prejudice relations between the UK and Scottish governments. Annual reports from the MOD's internal watchdog were released for 10 years but ceased being published in 2017. A Freedom of Information appeal to a UK tribunal to force the MOD to again release these reports was rejected in July 2021. Reports for 2005 to 2015 highlighted regulatory risks 86 times, including 13 rated as high priority. One issue repeatedly seen as a risk was a shortage of suitable, qualified, and experienced engineers. Brian, how safe do you feel being this close to a nuclear base?
Absolutely. It's one of the things that I think is just a constant concern. I think it's always present. I think that this particular story is interesting, right? So you've got the UK government and its establishment as such is trying to keep hold of these potential risks, okay, to safety. They are aware that the Scottish government is anti-nuclear weapons. And they've got a clear understanding that the general population in Scotland is anti-nuclear weapons. So in doing this, what they're actually doing is stoking this to be a bigger issue, right? So, however, this story has not been covered in many places. So this story is from the Ferret. It's not really something that you can just whip up and see, you know, on the mainstream media, or I certainly haven't come across it in the quick searches that I've done. And really, we've got something that's incredibly dangerous, close to the biggest city in Scotland, you know, which is a massive, massive risk. And the UK government is aware of this. They're aware of the potential risks. They're aware of the shortages for specialist engineers, as you're saying. But it's the fact, it's just the moral and humane argument, you know, against nuclear weapons, you know, presides over everything rather than the logistics, rather than the concerns. But the UK government in itself is being potentially held to account by a government where this nuclear weapon has been stored, and they themselves don't want to open themselves up to scrutiny. And it's just absolutely unacceptable, completely unacceptable. I think some of the comments that were made in the article from the Ferret with the Scottish Green Party was really striking. And really, what this is even more concerning is the, like you're saying, the information that came out in the past was highlighting some really high risk and real big issues, and now they're refusing to publish the information. So actually, as the findings continue to decline, as the concerns becoming more problematic. So, you know, for me, as someone who's completely against nuclear weapons on a humane and an ethical basis, and this is just feeding more into the logistical concerns, the cost factors, the, you know, everything to do with, you know, what do we do with the waste, how do we store it safely? The answer is you can't. So, you know, for me personally, I think this is just, it just sort of sets out the argument for independence really, really quite articulately here. So you've got the UK government who, you know, uses the nuclear deterrent, as they call it, as, you know, the jewel in the crown when it comes to this militaristic and authoritarian and its view against international affairs. And you've got a Scottish government there that is vehemently against the investments in nuclear weapons. So I think this just kind of sums up for me personally one of the key reasons for Scottish independence, to remove the nuclear weapons from 40 miles away from our biggest city.
Rachel?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's arguments for and against nuclear weapons, especially with what's happened in Ukraine and around the world. But I think that even for someone that was in favour of nuclear weapons, I think that the transparency and the fact that they are not releasing the safety reports is really, really shocking. Like, even if you supported nuclear weapons, you know, the fact that they're not releasing these reports is a very dangerous situation. And also the fact that they keep saying, oh, we're not going to release it because of anti-nuclear arguments from the Scottish government. Like, when I read that, I found that completely laughable, because I actually personally, for me, like, I don't really have a firm view on nuclear weapons either way. Like, I agree that they're a bad thing, but I accept that in certain situations it might be wise to have some sort of deterrent. But the fact that they are doing it, like, without any democratic accountability, and they're basically saying, well, you do not have the right to even see what the safety report says, so that you could maybe enact the recommendations of it, you could discuss to like how to make it safer, or if it can't be made safer, like how to get rid of these weapons. They're just, I really kind of feel like I can really understand the argument for independence, because they're trying to do this. This is not, as we know, this is not the first time that they're actually trying to undermine what the Scottish government are up to, like compared with the English government. They're saying, oh, well, you know, you, even though like you're like, even though you've got autonomy and this, like, you still do not have the right to say what goes on in Scotland, like with these weapons. And, you know, if you like make a law, then we're just going to like come in and change it at some point. And I just, that's basically like my view on it. I think that you can argue about whether you want them or not, but I just think that it's a totally undemocratic and like outrageous and frankly unsafe thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons I'm not releasing this is they don't want this constant reminder to people where weapons are really dangerous.
If it's 40 miles from a city, then okay, like, what if there's an accident, or what if Russia or someone else, America maybe, or whoever it may be, like, decides to bloody well launch a nuclear attack? Like 40.
Yeah, it means there's a target and it is a populated area of Scotland. I do have concerns that, you know, either they're doing it because they don't like this contract reminder, or the alternative is much worse. The risks are getting even more out of control, even more dangerous, and they just don't want that out there.
The fact that they're not even letting the Scottish government look, that's quite concerning. When there's a terrorist attack or something happens, like Cobra is supposed to involve like all the people in like different governments of the UK, and obviously one of them is, and if they don't have access to all of the information, what are they supposed to do?
Yeah, I mean, the Scottish government's in charge of policing. All these sort of local services need to be aware of what risk. It's terrifying. What else are they hiding? What is going on there that they're so keen to? Is it just politics? Or when it said that one of the, you know, as far back as, you know, 2015, there was a shortage of suitably qualified and experienced engineers. That made me think of Brexit and made me think they're having even more trouble now getting suitably qualified engineers. So I'd imagine there's not that many people that are qualified to look after a nuclear weapon, whatever that involves.
I mean, I imagine it'll be on the skill shortage list, wouldn't it?
Yeah, so pretty scary. If Deborah was on here, she would be really up mums with this. She stays even closer than
yeah.
I'm not bloody surprised, because it should not be 40 miles from the most populated city in Scotland. End of story. You could argue about where to put it or to have it, but it should not be in an area that is 40 miles away from. Fucking outrageous. Sorry.
And now a word from our sponsor.
Our sponsor this week is Sense of Nature Pet Service, based in central Scotland. Sense of Nature gives you a hands-on, personalised experience with a variety of exciting creatures, from snakes and skunks to tarantulas and turtles. Sense of Nature has something for everyone. They offer sensory sessions, one-to-one and group sessions, educational encounters for children of all ages, and they are available for private events upon inquiry. Animal welfare is at the forefront of everything they do, and if appropriate, a risk assessment can be carried out at no additional cost prior to your booking. To get 5% off your next booking with Sense of Nature, quote Holyrood Ungagged 5 at time of booking. To contact Sense of Nature, you can do so by email on sense.of.natureinquiries@outlook.com. You can also find them on most social media platforms by searching for Sense of Nature.
US President Joe Biden visited Ireland this week, and this appears to have upset the right-wing media in the UK. President Biden's love of Ireland is well known in the context of Brexit and the continued suspension of power-sharing executive in Northern Ireland. His every utterance and even the most minute detail of his visit were scrutinised for evidence of anti-Britishness. The Times, along with the Daily Telegraph and the Daily Mail, all gave their readers a list of previous quotes by Mr. Biden that they claimed to show his bias against Britain. The Times also carried a cartoon of the US president dressed as a dancing leprechaun with a pint of Guinness in hand, which many on Twitter condemned as being reminiscent of the 19th century anti-Irish punch cartoons. A White House spokesman felt it necessary to deny a claim by the former DUP leader Arlene Foster that President Biden hates the United Kingdom. In fact, Ms. Foster, speaking in GB News, said that because Mr. Biden's car flew Irish tricolours while in the Republic of Ireland, but failed to fly Union Jacks in Northern Ireland, this was an evidence of a snub to the UK. Rachel, have you caught much of the coverage of Joe Biden's visit to Ireland?
I haven't watched the Joe Biden thing in particular, but recently the Tories have really kind of like, I mean, there was a recent incident that I want to highlight. I think it was the Brexiter called Kate Hoey. I think she was very involved in Vote Leave. I don't think she's like formally a Tory, although she might have joined. But she says something like, people who accept the deal that Rishi Sunak has just done with the EU over Northern Ireland, she basically compared the EU to Nazi collaborators, and that compared people who do a deal with the EU to Nazi collaborators, and like saying basically that the EU are Nazis. And of course, Ireland is an EU country. But the thing is, a few weeks ago, the Northern Ireland threat level was actually raised to severe by saying that like there was going to be, which means that it could be like an attack. This kind of like rhetoric of saying, oh, well, why didn't you put the British flag and all of this? I don't see how it's just not incitement to terrorism. I don't see how that's just not, if it, in an atmosphere where it's saying that there's going to be an attack and kind of like almost like deliberately stirring up this kind of hatred. I just don't see how it's not inciting terrorists.
Right.
Yeah, Joe Biden's visit seems to have the right people, so quite enjoying that. The comments from Arlene Foster were funny. The interview that, or was it even an interview? Was it just a rant from Dan Wooten on GB News, basically saying, you know, kind of echoing this anti-British sentiment. And whatnot, and then there was he even showed a clip of I think it was sort of you know representation of the White House, of journalists asking a question about, you know, do you think Joe Biden is anti-UK, etc., etc. Mm. And then this person was just laughing, just being like, what are you talking about? But I think what this kind of exposes again is the sort of a right wing or the UK media establishment seeing anything that's particularly pro Ireland as anti-UK, really quite strange. You know, Arlene Foster sort of zooming in, though they flew the tricolours, but they didn't fly the Union Jack when they were in the north. It's just sort of like, what are we reducing this down to? Like, just stop it. But you know, going to the more sort of meaningful side of things with Biden's visit in the north, you know, kind of sidestepping the sort of he snubbed Rishi Sunak and, you know, downgraded the meeting, like whatever, some bi latte or something like that. It was some naff thing that it was called. But Joe Biden,
I think it was from the UK side, they described it as a bilateral meeting, and Joe Biden just said it was they were just catching a cup of coffee.
Yeah, it's like, well, yeah, it's like, you know, apparently downgrading or not making it as important as what it needs to be. But I think with Joe Biden, the sort of clear message was that, you know, he hopes that the Stormont would be a functioning institution again soon. I think he was sort of indirectly pointing towards the DUP for them blocking the formation of an administration, therefore the Stormont been able to function. And then, you know, he was only here for 15 hours, I think, in total in the North Ireland. And Dan Wooten is, he's only here for 15 hours, most of which he'll be sleeping. I was like, yeah, he's just been on a long flight. And then, of course, the most striking thing is, how much more fun did it look like he was having in the Republic of Ireland versus the 15 hours that he spent in the north of Ireland? He was like having the best time. He just looked so happy. And you know, he's got family roots in the area, I think it was Way area, and he's just having the best time. So I hope he had a great visit. I'm not the world's biggest Joe Biden fan, but at the same time, I just love the way that it just pissed off the right people, particularly GB News, the likes of Arlene Foster, and the people who, you know, are just real snowflakes about anything to this, not, you know, all singing, all dancing unionism or something that might be remotely pro-Ireland doesn't automatically mean it's anti-UK. Everybody calm down.
When you were saying about, I mean, I haven't really, I'm afraid I haven't really looked that much of the Joe Biden visit, but when you were talking about the flag issue, I just was reminded a couple of years ago when those like loyalists had those riots about flags in, I can't remember where it was now, that they were rioting that the Union Jack wasn't on a particular building and the Irish tricolour was.
They weren't going to fly.
Yeah.
There was a move of the council that they weren't going to fly the Union Jack every single day. And that was what then spun into a huge political crisis. You know, I'm not a fan of Biden. I'm sure a raking leftists get a lot of criticisms. I think he is a bit anti-British. And that's probably one of the few things I actually like about him. I find it funny when, like, the BBC turns around going, "I'm Irish," and then walked away.
I remember that. I thought that was brilliant. I think as well, Biden got on a very bad start with Boris Johnson because Boris Johnson, like, openly basically wanted Trump to win, and since then he's just kind of like not liked any Tory. And I think that's just the impression that I get about Biden, that he's not the most, clearly not the most left wing of people, but he, you know, for what the kind of politician he is, he's okay. I just know that, like, with Boris Johnson, he got on a bad start with him, and I think since then he's just like kind of like deliberately trolling the Tories.
Yeah, and the thing with Biden as well, he's been around for a long time. Yeah. You know, he was at the forefront of politics when in the 80s when there was when the Troubles were going on. You know, he cares about it, and it's so clear that the only reason that the Stormont Assembly isn't functioning is the DUP lost the election, basically, and they threw their toys at the pram because they refused to have a Sinn Féin First Minister, even though the Nationalist side took part in the power sharing executive all through the last 20 years, like when there was a Ulster Unionist and then a DUP First Minister. But now that the Nationalists have been more successful, the DUP are through their toys at the pram and don't want to take part. And I think somebody from the Biden camp actually said, you know, they would have spent more time in the North Island, but with the Assembly not functioning and things like that, you know, there's a limit to, you know, what he could do. And I think this has really exposed in a kind of post-Brexit Britain a real sense of insecurity. You know, when considering Brexit was all about re-establishing that kind of imperial power and making Britain great again, you know, it's really shown up the weakness of Britain in the world stage. Things that they clung on to was that they were America's best pal, and it really strikes at the kind of that idea of the special relationship when there is a president that clearly favours the European nation, particularly the fact that it's Ireland, and the idea that Ireland might have more influence than Britain, I think is infuriating to certain nationalists.
I think there's like another aspect. There's another aspect to it as well, which is the whole idea with Brexit and Trump and like to some extent like some of these other leaders. You know, the whole idea that populism is like right wing nationalist populism is like an unstoppable force that's just gonna take over the world. You know, all of these people that have they think in their mind. Obviously, it's usually just Tories. A lot of it's just like Tories that are voting for them. But like, you know, all of the in this mind, this like movement of like the supposed like left behind and stuff is going to take over the world and like sweep aside like the old elite. And Biden, very much whatever his faults, represents a certain type of liberal democracy that people thought that those kind of right wingers thought was basically dead, and that they thought that they were like the future. And the Tories were, I think, very, very upset that Trump didn't win. And I think because I think they expected him to. And I think the whole fact that Biden ended up winning and not Trump is still something they're quite sore about.
Yeah, the coverage on GB News very much. That was actually the first sentence, basically, that the establishment was so happy that Trump won and Biden. So I think that that's definitely a sore point for a lot of people, and particularly in the British establishment, I would agree. Absolutely. Particularly the right wing Tory government that we had at the time.
Yeah, I think a bit of contrast as well when you see Biden in his ancestral home in Ireland compared to the reaction Trump got whenever he came to Scotland, where his mother was born. You know, and I really hope that Trump caught some of the scenes of Biden being embraced and hated by the Irish people, because, you know, he's never going to get that in Scotland. There's absolutely nobody worth their salt in Scotland would give him the time of day. And he's such a pathetic individual, I'm sure that would really upset him. Any other last-minute comments about Joe Biden before we move on?
One thing I will say, again, this feel like I've just sort of discussed this more from the lens of how frustrating the media can be, but the funniest thing is that if you've got somebody, I think it was Joe Biden's auntie, Gertrude, it's coming back to my head, basically said, you know, when he was going to meet the Queen for the first time, that, you know, do not bow to her, do not bow to her. And Dan Wooten in his massive rant was just thinking that's like, you'd actually think that somebody just gone up to him in public and slapped him, because he was just so angry that, you know, somebody, a relative of Biden, would tell him to do that. And, you know, was it his mother or something that said, you know, she wouldn't sleep in a bed because the Queen had slept in it and stuff like that. But if there's one thing that gets to right-wingers and really just turns them into these sort of sleety, horrible snowflakes, it's when someone criticises the royal family or criticises a big establishment figure like that. And it just really gets to them. Do you know what? I live for stuff like that. I absolutely live for it. So yeah, like, you know, I'm quite happy about this visit in the North and in the Republic of Ireland.
Yeah, I mean, there must be in a state of permanage at the moment, because it seems Charles can't go anywhere without people booing him or trying to hit him with an egg. So,
Well, you know, that's just going to upset certain people, isn't it?
Like you said before, it will upset all the right people.
And I live for that.
Okay, here's the final. This is an attempt to have our... we kept doing podcasts and depressing ourselves, Rachel. So last week we made an attempt to have a light-hearted segment at the end, and I took it way too seriously and ruined the whole thing. So this is our second go at having a nice sort of light-hearted, easy-going topic. So fingers crossed, we'll see how it goes. Who's more deluded, Liz Truss or Douglas Ross? Liz Truss, the former British Prime Minister, whose tenure lasted 50 days, sought to revive her political career and economic agenda this week with a major speech to the Conservative Heritage Foundation, more than 3,500 miles away from home. In the speech, she blamed woke culture and a grand political conspiracy involving members of her own party, the IMF and Joe Biden, for her political downfall and hinted at a return to the forefront of UK politics. While Liz Truss was speaking to the Heritage Foundation, Scottish Conservative leader Douglas Ross was speaking to the Sunday Telegraph. He said, "Whether is the strongest candidate to beat the SNP, you get behind that candidate," implying that Conservative voters could tactically back Labour to oust SNP in certain seats. In response, a UK Tory spokesman said, "This is emphatically not the view of the Conservative Party." So who's more deluded? Liz Truss for thinking she still has a career, or Douglas Ross for thinking that he had any authority in the Conservative Party? I can't remember who I spoke to last.
Oh, I'll go first on this one.
On you go, Brian.
I am no fan of Douglas Ross, but I'm absolutely going to go with Liz Truss on this one, because you can. I think Liz Truss might be one of the most delusional politicians in the UK at the moment. If you go to that speech that she made to the Heritage Foundation, it's like, it's almost like playing right-wing politics bingo, because you've got like the word woke, and then you've got identity politics and all these different things, and how we need to have, you know, a freer economy, more neoliberalism, less regulation, you know, lower taxes. Everything that she'd done in 50 days and completely and utterly trashed the economy. We need more of that. It was just, yeah, I absolutely would say that Liz Truss is more delusional. Turning to Douglas Ross briefly, because there's not really much to say on Douglas Ross ever. But he said that, you know, that sort of tactical thing, there might be a unionist sort of tactical thing, you know, for people switching from the, you know, Labour to the Tories or vice versa. I think he could be onto something, but I don't think it's official. But there is a lot of tactical voting that might go on when it comes to first past the post type of elections. So I think Douglas Ross is maybe trying to tap into that sentiment, but perhaps try to make it more official than what it ever could be in the eyes of the law. But of course, the Westminster absolutely just slapping him down and was just more funny. And it's just, Douglas Ross makes comments like this all the time, and it's almost like you can just see everybody in the background just going, "Shut up, like you're actually just talking absolute nonsense." But the funniest thing about Douglas Ross as well is apparently there could be strike action with is it referees, linesmen, people who support.
Yeah, Douglas Ross, as well as being the Scottish Tory leader, is also a referee.
Yeah.
It wasn't enough to be hated as one of them. He wants to be doubly hated. I think a psychologist would really have a field day with that. But
must have some sort of like pathological need to just be despised.
Just dislike me. I think that the cohort of workers that he works alongside might actually be going on strike. So wouldn't that be fascinating, right? But Douglas Ross is definitely going to be a scab, isn't he? But yeah, can, you know, if he did actually go out and strike, actually being on a picket line as the leader of the Conservative Party,
he's going to cross the picket line, though, isn't he?
Yeah, I just think it's hilarious in itself, you know? But absolutely, Liz Truss is way more delusional than what Douglas Ross is. I think Douglas Ross knows he's not that good. I think Douglas Ross must know that he's, like, at best a mediocre politician. Liz Truss actually thinks that she could make some kind of comeback, which to me is just fascinating. I think, like, before she got asked to leave her position as Prime Minister, I think the polling was down at like 13% or something for the Tories, was it not? And it was like they might return, like, you know, between 1 and 5 seats. And I mean, you've lost, mate. Like, that's just the... That's a clear signal. Like, even the hardcore Tory headbangers are saying that they would vote Labour in a general election. So maybe, you know, maybe it's time just to step to the side. And the men in green came along and told her to stand down. But yeah, this the right wing politics bingo that was being played in that, and just blaming everything on identity politics and blah blah blah, was just that's the most deluded thing I've seen all week, to be honest.
Yeah, I've got to agree with you on that. Just reading the speech now, we need to fight this battle of ideas once again. Mrs. Thatcher would have expected nothing less.
She's dead.
Yeah, but what I would say is that Douglas Ross, given the hopelessness of especially Keir Starmer, you know, the fact that Douglas Ross is saying this. I mean, I don't know anything about him apart from the fact that he's a Tory, but you know, the fact that the Scottish Tory leader is saying vote Labour, like, to me isn't such a ringing endorsement of the Labour Party. Like, if I was either the Scottish Labour leader, I think is it still Kezia Dugdale? No, it's not.
Oh,
her.
No, not for a while.
Okay,
she was 2 leaders ago. Scottish Labour is a bit of a merry-go-round, so it's hard to keep up.
Is it Anna?
Yes.
I thought so. I don't know why I said her, but if it was either him or Keir Starmer, I would be asking like serious questions to myself about the direction of the party, to say why, to be like, why on earth is it going this way?
Yeah, why does the Tory leader think that people should vote for us?
Yeah, and turning to Liz Truss, I mean, unfortunately, I do think that she reckons that she could come back, and she's completely delusional, but there are some Tories who actually agree, and they think that she was sabotaged in what she was trying to do. Like, for instance, like, my nemesis Daniel Hannan said that she'd been basically stifled from doing what she was going to do by like a coalition of the IMF and all the rest of it. And there's this kind of narrative with some of them that she wasn't able to do it because she was prevented, rather than because she was shit and what she was going to do was going to ruin the economy.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things about the speech that I found baffling, when she was claiming that, you know, this grand conspiracy stopped her doing what she wanted to do. No, that was a problem. Nobody stopped you. Nobody stopped you. You actually did become Prime Minister. You did get your crazy budget and, you know, the economy tanked and we lost truly billions overnight. Unfortunately, there wasn't a grand conspiracy to stop that kind of economic self-harm.
Yeah, if only there actually had been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If there was some sort of grand plan, then maybe it wouldn't have been as bad if the current government of the day had done what they had done and there was actually some kind of plan. It might not have been actually as disastrous as it was because the government just done what they wanted to do.
You know, maybe she's got a bit more awareness than we give her credit for, because she didn't say this in front of a UK audience. Genuinely, I think. Even a Tory or right-wing audience in the UK might have let out some chuckles at some of the stuff, but she's speaking to a, you know, extreme right-wing audience in America that probably don't know any, like, kind of a lot of the details, and they'll lap up this nonsense that she was Prime Minister apparently enforced out, you know?
Apparently the title of the lecture was the 2023 Margaret Thatcher Freedom Lecture.
Margaret Thatcher, who's
the
in the
Margaret
ground,
Thatcher Freedom
in the dirt,
Lecture.
Just to remind you.
Yeah.
Just in case anybody forgot, Margaret Thatcher is still in the dirt.
Yeah.
You were saying there, David, that you know that Liz Truss wouldn't, you only she didn't say this to a British audience. Unfortunately, she did. It was like, was it last month or the month before? Like, you know, when she'd gone quiet for about 3 months, you're just taking a like hide and let all the drama you know, kind of blow over, wrote that massive essay in the Tory Graph or something like that, and that was behind a paywall that basically blamed everybody else for her failures apart from herself. So, you know, actually she's that delusional that she thinks she can get away with stuff like that, you know. It's
Putting it in print and saying it to people's faces when, you know, I genuinely think if she'd made that speech to the equivalent audience in the UK, there have been chuckles, you know, even they would have laughed.
To be fair, I think that she was interviewed for The Spectator on that podcast, which is, if you watch it, it's actually really funny. It's like, you've got Katie Balls, who, you know, is, you know, a Spectator journalist, of the right, you know, and her face just looks bewildered when she's like talking about certain things, like who she's blaming, and even she's just staring at Liz to be like, really? Like, you know, it's, yeah, the whole Liz Truss is just, there is no way that she can make a comeback, you know. And I remember seeing, was it last month, when she was chosen again as the candidate for her seat, and I'm just like, what are you doing? It's just, it's insane, absolutely delusional.
But on the other hand, it is completely insane, but it's like, it is part of this really weird, like, kind of like conspiracy theorizing that the Tories seem to have gotten themselves into. Like, you know, she's saying here, like, this sounds very much like sort of Trump's rhetoric about the deep state and all this sort of thing. She argued that the West has lost its way since the Cold War, big government has gotten out of control, and accused the legal, educational, environmental and agricultural establishments of resisting change to the status quo. And then she says, as Prime Minister, I simply underestimated the scale and depth of this resistance and the scale and depth to which it reached into the media and into the broader establishment. This sounds incredibly much like Donald Trump's of deep reset ideology. To me, I mean, it's very, very funny and very delusional, but it's kind of like, you know, I do think there's something kind of like a bit concerning there.
I want to know who's part of the agricultural establishment. Rachel, you said you're getting allotment, so does that make you part of the agricultural establishment?
I think it probably does, actually.
If we cracked this case, do you think it was Liz Truss that spread the salt in Carly Bird's allotment?
I mean, to be honest, like, I'm guessing that she probably wouldn't have been opposed. Let's put it that way.
Do you know who is part of the agricultural establishment? Jeremy Corbyn.
He does have an allotment. That's all making sense.
He does.
And not just any allotment. Like, he speaks about it every opportunity that he has.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
Jeremy Corbyn is definitely part of the agricultural.
I think he's in the conspiracy.
Absolutely.
It's all falling into place. You were saying you were doing some gardening at the weekend, Brian. That's
just climbing up that greasy pole.
It's soon it starts with that, and then before you know it, you're like the secretary of the allotment committee, and then before you, you're like head of the National Farmers Union, and like on your way to murder this trust.
head commissar in charge of potatoes.
Yeah, exactly.
Just to go back as well, Douglas Ross and the whole referee strike thing. I literally keep thinking scenarios, and every one of them I start laughing at. Like, so if he doesn't go on strike and he scabs, that's kind of funny. If he does go on strike and we'll get Douglas Ross asking for solidarity, you know.
And then Keir Starmer won't even go near a picket line, and then you'll have Douglas Ross on the picket line.
Imagine that's... Douglas Ross in the picket line. That would be so funny.
It's like... things I never thought I would see. be Douglas Ross even considering or even voting to go on strike. I think that's just, you know, it's such a bizarre thing to even contemplate. But, you know, it's just quite interesting that, yeah, like you were just saying, that we'll have the leader of the Scottish Conservatives on a picket line, but we could not have
Keir Starmer on the picket line.
It's just so weird.
Well, on that note, I think we'll conclude. Rachel, thanks for joining us. Brian, always a pleasure.
You're welcome.
You can find all our podcasts at leftungag.org, as well as written articles, and you can also sign up for our free newsletter. Check out our sister podcast, Talking Sense, with Kat and Erin. And if you've got anything you want us to talk about, you can tweet us at _ungagged, #HolyroodUngagged. Or you can send us an email, ungaggedleft@gmail.com, and put Holyrood Ungagged in the subject line. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us 5 stars on whatever platform you use. We also have a Discord community, so if you're interested and involved with that, please contact us through any of our social media channels. But until then, have fun, be good, and be lucky.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
St. Louis, Missouri, 3 brothers playing games. One looks through his father's drawers, fatal mistake. Parents started to the sound of a bang, brushed up someone's son on the ground. Another with a gun in his hand, he thought it was a toy. Wake up, America, ban the